In my second episode of the Behind the Troupe, the story of the improv group Comic Frenzy, I interview Sarah Hendricks, who before marriage was known as Sarah Alsop. I already released the episode of Jeff Blake, and then I'm releasing this episode with Sarah. And I mentioned that there is another person I interviewed called Brady, so that episode is still coming out. So you will hear that I recorded these in a different order than I'm releasing them. I just putting that in as a production note once again to backtrack in case you haven't heard the first episode. Comic Frenzy was an improv troupe from the college BYU, Idaho. It was student run and produced, and then became a part of the actual curriculum of the theater department. So it has a 20-year history that's amazing and fun and exciting to research and talk about. So this is another installment of interviewing the people behind the scenes of the troupe Comic Frenzy. Learn a little bit about improv and about the history of the group in general. Have fun. Welcome. Daily Chat Chat. Bye. It's time to chit chat. I'm Richard. Let's talk about what's streaming, what I'm liking, what I'm not so much enjoying, and maybe even some random tangents along the way. All right, let's chit chat. All right. Well, welcome to your special interview.
Thank you. Thank you. I am trying very hard to remember Comic Frenzy and realized it's about 2 decades ago.
I know. Started. 2 decades. I'm excited for that because hopefully if timing works out, I could just pump this out by the 20th anniversary, right? If you don't mind just introducing yourself at first, and then we can get into business.
Okay. So my name now is Sarah Hendricks, but I was Sarah Alsop when I did Comic Frenzy. And I was at BYU, Idaho. I was studying English at the time. I had done improv when I was in high school. So when I heard that some people were starting an improv group, I was really excited to join. So I was there for the first auditions. And then I was in Comic Frenzy the whole time that I was there. I graduated a little early in 3.5 years. So I don't know how long that makes. I was in Comic Frenzy, maybe 2.5 years. And then since then, I've just kind of like traveled the world and got married and had kids. And now I'm teaching English at a university in Japan.
That's pretty cool. I guess for the start of Comic Frenzy, I do want to bring up right off the bat, as far as gender politics go in Comic Frenzy, I would assume at the beginning you might have been the only girl, but I don't know that for a fact.
So at the beginning, I think it was just me and Patrice. And forgive me if I'm like forgetting people's names, but it's been a long time and I'm an old lady now. But I actually remember like being very annoyed with Patrice because she would never come to practice. She very rarely came to practice. But when we had shows, it was really important that she was there because we didn't want to have, you know, 11 boys and one girl, right? So whenever there was a show, we would say, yes, 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 Patrice, please come, please come. And then she'd come and she didn't know how to do any of the games. And it was a little bit annoying.
I feel like that's a fair a fair assessment, because later, as we know, and I say this as it's common knowledge, but later, as we know, as the group evolved through the years, I do know that probably towards the end, maybe you were still there, because the timelines are kind of fuzzy, but I know that Valerie and James and Brant came out with the Comic Frenzy Constitution, and part of that was, if you're not at the first 3 rehearsals in a row or whatever before a show, you can't be in the show. And so I know that frustration was valid, because it later became a rule, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I actually wasn't in the beginning, because my roommate saw like the little piece of paper hanging in the hallway or something, and came home and was like, oh, you're really funny. You should do this. And I hadn't seen it before that. So it was almost an all male Comic Frenzy.
Wow. Yeah. Which I get that too, because in the comedy world at large, you look at it and my favorite comedians and improvisers and sketch comedy people are women, but that wasn't always something that was common to be seen, like in the media. And then also they had to fight so hard to get where they're at. Like, you don't get Tina Fey and Amy Poehler unless you get them just like fighting their way through these guys. And they were like, they were the one girl in their improv team, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's just kind of cool to see that changes do happen, at least with, yeah, gender. But then, you know, BYU-Idaho is, I want to say, a predominantly white campus. So you don't even get very people of color joining Comic Frenzy. And even when I've seen it, it might have been in 2017, 18, 19, that they would have like 1 or 2 people of color in the group. But I don't know if that's a BYU-Idaho problem, an Idaho problem, a Mormon problem, or a comedy problem. But it could all be that.
Yeah, I think they all work together.
Yeah, but it's a problem, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. That much I know, that it's just a problem that there's not a lot of diversity.
Yeah, it's definitely a problem. I don't know if it's getting any better, but maybe someday.
That's a good hope. Like, we hope that the future, let's just talk about it in the scope of Comic Frenzy, we hope that that future is diverse and lovely and beautiful and wonderful for the next 20 years. I'm just surprised. Are you surprised that Comic Frenzy, starting in the year of our Lord 2002, is still around these 20 years later?
To be honest, I am. I remember when it started, none of us really knew what it was or what it was going to be, because some people were trying to pull it in the direction of being like a business, like comedy sports, you know? So the first year that it started, people were trying to get us like off-campus shows or rent a space where we would charge and we would like take home the money that we made. And we did a couple of those shows where, you know, 35 people would come and they'd pay $2. And then after we paid for the space, all of us would go home with 85 cents, you know, or something. And then we were doing shows on the campus, but we were also trying to do shows for like campus events, like opening for other events. And so it was a little bit confusing what we were, where we were going, and how it was organized. And so there was a bunch of times in the first couple of years when I was like, I don't know if this is gonna stick around. But then I also remember we had some shows, and you could never tell which show was going to be like this. We had some shows where people would start lining up like an hour in advance, and the lines would be like out the building. And it was just like, wait, 2 weeks ago we did a show and there were more people on stage than in the audience. So it was just, you never knew what the next show was going to be like or where it was going to be. So yeah, I'm pretty surprised.
Yeah, I'm so glad I'm doing this too, because it triggers a lot of memories that I've had being a BYU-Idaho student and a former member of Comic Frenzy. But before that, a big fan of Comic Frenzy. And I remember being a part of one of those huge lineups that went from the Kirkham Black Box Theater all the way outside the Kirkham building. There was like a row of lockers, I think, upstairs. You know, that was a pretty janky building, but we were lined up all through the hallway, out the door. And yeah, it was a popular event when it was a popular event. So I can see that inconsistency in you going, what? We're a big hit this month? But then the next month, no one comes. And you're like, what's happening?
Yeah. And I remember, you know, sometimes we would get a call and it would be like, you know, James or Jeff, and they'd be like, hey, we've got a space in 2 days on Friday. Let's try and do a show. Okay. And then other times it would be like, okay, so we have a show in 3 months. And like me and a friend, we'd go like apartment building to apartment building, door by door, and like hand out little invitation flyers. And so sometimes it was just really organized ahead of schedule. And sometimes it was just like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll be there tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. I could totally see that too. And I talked to Jeff Blake yesterday. And so I think the funny thing is, as I'm doing these interviews, I'm going to learn different things and I'm going to hear different things. And then it's going to influence and inform the next interview. But I mean, I always have the opportunity to go back and be like, oh, by the way, I forgot. There's this new information. Can anyone vouch for it or verify it? But he was saying that he, being the more ADD personality, and so organization was not his strong suit. He was willing to do a thing and do the thing, but he would come late to rehearsals himself, and he was one of the founding members. And then you have John Gagnon, who I think Jeff told me he was more of a lawyer type guy, like, you know, very, you know, let's get our ducks in a row and let's get this in order. And so them together worked. But then, of course, John Gagnon went on his mission, and then Jeff had to lead without him. And then, you know, James kind of takes a more role, the organized role. And then, you know, later Brant Wadsworth comes in and everything. I don't know. So I totally get what you're saying, that it had its ups and downs. You never knew if it would solidify. Do you want to talk about like talent activities versus being under the umbrella of the theater department versus doing things off campus, like that mix of drama?
So I always went to rehearsals and I always followed the schedule, but I also, I didn't sign up for a leadership role. So whenever they would be like, oh, we're trying to organize this or we're trying to do this, I would be like, okay, fine, do that then. And just tell me how it turns out. So I don't know very much about, you know, the organization or who was in charge of what or how it went down. So I can't talk about that very much because I never paid attention and I didn't care. I was just like, okay, well, just, you know, tell me where to be and when. And I promise I'll be there 5 minutes early, but I'm not going to make any decisions.
That's good. That's good. As I understand it, those flyers go out that they had an opportunity to do a little mini show, like at one of those dances that were happening at the MC. And so they did that. And that's how James Best heard about it and a couple other people. And then the flyers came out and then they held actual auditions. And you say you were there?
Yeah, so I was there. And, you know, I'm a pretty modest, unassuming person. And I'm also pretty shy. And so I just kind of like came in and hung to the back. And then I did my audition. And I didn't think I did very well. And I'm, you know, I'm a humble, modest person. So I was actually really surprised that I made the team. And then I talked to Jeff and James about it later. And they're like, oh, no, we really liked you. Like from the very first instant that you started, we thought you were great and wanted to be on the, and we wanted you on the team. And I was like, oh, man, I thought I did terrible. And I was sure you weren't going to put me on the team. So, yeah, that was really nice. And so improvers in general, you know, they're outgoing and they are the life of the party sometimes. But I'm not really like that. Like, I'm a really just a quiet introvert. And then when I get on stage, I'm like, okay, so now quiet, introverted Sarah is done. And now I'm improv Sarah. And I kind of try to be a different person. But I actually, somebody said something to me later, and it really changed my life. It really changed my life. So I always thought that I was just kind of a shy, quiet person. And then Brady, I think it was Brady. He told me later that he thought I was very mean and unfriendly. And I was just blown away. Because I thought I was just being like, you know, quiet and listening. And he thought I was being like unwelcoming. So I felt really bad and I apologized for that. And it literally changed how I interact in social situations. Cause I'm like, okay, I'm uncomfortable and I'm shy, but I have to smile and be friendly to people. Otherwise, everyone's going to feel bad that I'm being mean to them.
Oh my goodness. I had just talked to Brady a couple of days ago too, and I know he mentioned you, but I don't remember him specifically mentioning if he felt like he was vibing with you the wrong way. But obviously, like I said, everyone now in the future is like, oh, we're all besties, even though we don't talk to each other. And one of his things was always like, oh man, I feel like I should have put more into Comic Frenzy. Like, I left the group and they're like, come back, come back. I'm like, no, I'm going to do my own thing now. It's whatever. Now I'm like, oh my gosh, I should have put more effort into that. I should have put more time and energy into it. And I felt like I had to tell him, but you know what? You made an impact. You made an impression. I remember seeing him in shows. I remember seeing everybody up on stage. And it's okay. Like, don't fret, Brady Moss. Do not fret.
Yeah. Well, he certainly made an impression on me. And then, like, after I told him, I'm like, oh, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to be that way. He was like, oh, no, it's okay. You know, we were never enemies.
Of course not. He's right. Very introspective, I think, too. So maybe, like, the common theme of the people I've interviewed so far with Brady and Blake, Jeff Blake and yourself, are that y'all have a time to be extroverted, but the introversion is very important to the process. And I think, I don't know if that's a common trait between all the people that do improv or just like the people I've been talking to lately, but it is interesting because I feel the same way. It's like, I'm very extroverted in certain situations. I'll go to a party and I know to turn it on. I'll do theater, I'll do improv and I'm on, but I just love like not doing anything all day sometimes and just like being alone or, you know, just little things to be out of that social climate. And especially with COVID, everyone's had to deal with a different way of coping with COVID.
And I think for me, it's that I really like everyone's roles to be well-defined. When I'm doing Comic Frenzy, I'm a performer. That's what I do. And when I'm like sitting quietly with a group of friends, I'm like, okay, well, I'm not a performer right now. I'm just sitting quietly with friends. So
that makes sense. Like to have these boundaries or these roles and positions and yeah, which again, we keep going back to Comic Frenzy, which makes sense because Comic Frenzy is the topic of discussion, but that would be difficult at the beginning because maybe later it was more defined that this is an artistic director. This is a, you know, treasurer. This is the stage manager. And this is, you know, you're a performer. And then that was more clearly defined later. Of course, you had already probably gone by the time it really got defined.
Mm-hmm. I remember in the very one of the first meetings, we were even trying to think of the name for it. And we were like, oh, how about Comedy Stampede? How about the Laugh Hut? And if I'm remembering right, I think we decided on Comedy Sports. And we're like, oh, that's a really good name. Oh, wow. We are geniuses. And we like decided on it, meeting finished. And then I remember like at the next meeting or something, James was like, oh, actually, we realized comedy sports is like a giant thing that's already done. And one of us must have heard it somewhere and said it. So actually, we're going to be Comic Frenzy, and just like made the unilateral decision. And I was like, did we ever decide on Comic Frenzy? Did anyone suggest? Okay, whatever. I don't care.
Well, that's good, because no one's really told me exactly how the name came, but that totally makes sense that you came up with a name that, in a time where we weren't glued to our Google devices, that no one like fact checked comedy sports.
And it's hard to think back, because I'm like, oh yeah, the whole time I was at college, I didn't have a cell phone. So then I was trying to think just now, like, how did James tell me that? Like, I want to say he texted me, but I didn't have a cell phone. So it must have been at the next meeting or something.
Yeah, that it's wild to know that when we were in college, it wasn't a given that you would have a cell phone, let alone be able to text on it if you had one. And that the selling point for like living at Sunrise Village was they had a landline with free long distance, so you could call home. Like, were we in the college in the 70s? No, we weren't. It was the turn of this, you know, 2000s era, but come on. Yeah. It's wild to think about. Yeah, and so like when you are doing shows, and if James says, all right, we've booked the room, we're going to do one right now, you can't go. I mean, there is Facebook, but it is not like Facebook today. It's not like you go on there and can invite people right away. They might not check it.
And I wasn't on Facebook at that time. So I remember very clearly signing up for Facebook like the year after I graduated from college.
Yeah, that's it's just wild to think about, because nowadays, and if anyone puts on an improv show, they're going to go to Facebook and invite all their friends and make a group event, and you're not doing that back then. And yeah. And then people
were handing out little flyers door to door.
Just putting it on the car windshields, you know, come on, come to the show. Now, fond memories, like, are there, I know you said that you had to dig back into the recesses of your Comic Frenzy knowledge and history, but like, are there standout moments or scenes or shows or even in rehearsals that funny experiences happened or like memorable experiences happened?
I remember at one point, one of my favorite things to do, to be a part of, was the musical improv. So we had a pianist, and I think it was Jeff, not Jeff Blake, but different Jeff. And he was amazing. And then sometimes Jeff Blake and Brant would get together to sing their little improv, whatever. And I really liked that. Oh, that was really amazing. So they made some really good improv songs together. I really liked that. Other than that, I have some like really strong memories. Oh, I'm repeating myself. Nope. So I have some really strong memories, and like, I don't know if they were super funny, but they were just like so memorable. One time we were doing a show, it was off campus. For some reason, I was pretending to be a cow, and like Ben came up to like milk the cow, and the whole audience just like started laughing and laughing. And I was like, I don't see what's so funny. I'm a cow. He's milking me. That's a normal thing. And then they were like, well, it's because you're a woman, and you know, you can be milked. And I was like, okay. But I wasn't a woman in the seat. I was a cow. Obviously, you know, God, they're just disgusting.
And
so everybody thought it was just so funny. And I was like, it's not though. I was a cow. That's a normal thing for a cow to do.
Theatrically, in the moment, it was not funny. It was real. Okay.
Yeah. Cows that we milk are female. So normal.
Normal. Get your mind out of the udder.
I love it.
I had to.
And like another time, it was pre-show, and somebody put on some music, you know, in the auditorium. This was on campus. This was for an on-campus show in our normal arena that we did most of the shows in. And they put on a Ben Folds 5 song, and it was like the joining the army song. Do you know that song? So they started the song, and everybody, like all of the comic frenzy people, kind of perked up our ears and were like, "Oh, I know this song." And it's like, "I thought about the army," and then we all kind of realized what the next sentence was, and we were like, "No, we can't play that next lyric." Ah. And I don't remember who it was. Maybe Ben, like, was able to dash across and, like, stop the music before the offensive lyric played. But, oh, we laughed about that for such a long time.
Yeah, because I was going to say the dichotomy of being at a conservative university such as BYU-Idaho, it had its dual roles of informing the way you did improv and also, like, kind of challenging you to, you know, don't be dirty, don't say a bad word, because like it would be so easy to go on stage on campus and be like, "What the F is happening?" and then get canceled, you know, like always fear of getting canceled. And I think it made us stronger performers, like honestly, because nowadays, you know, we're older and wiser and we're doing theater out in the world. But we don't always have to lean on those inappropriate humor mindsets, because we learned to do it super clean and it was fine and we were better for it?
Yeah. And I mean, to be honest, I have never in my life done an improv show where me or any of the performers were allowed to be dirty, because I started in high school and then I went to BYU-Idaho. And then I did Comedy Sports Provo, and then I did Comedy Sports Twin Cities. And Comedy Sports is also billed as a family-friendly, clean show. So in my long and storied improv career, I have never once said a bad word on stage.
Amen.
Just in my private life, constantly.
Yeah, but it's neat to have that almost filter or like switch to be like, "Oh, we're going to be clean comedy. We're not going to make a mistake," and then like turn it off and just be real with the people you could be real with. Yeah, it's interesting, because I assume, like when I was in Comic Frenzy, we would get letters. I assume they were emails, but like when the theater department came to us, they're like, "Well, we got some letters." I'm like, were people handwriting letters and dropping them off in that mailbox in front of the school? Like, or were these emails?
The carrier pigeon was dropping them.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, who's writing letters? But they were like, "We were watching a Comic Frenzy performance and two males were on stage and they were married." But like your cow situation, I was like, "No, I was playing a woman in that scene. So you saw it wrong."
Yeah.
So I was actually in a straight relationship in that scene. So get with the times.
Yeah. I don't remember if we ever got any complaints about our appropriateness. I do remember, because we were doing, like, there was a benefit dinner for award something, attendees. And we did like a warm-up little show for them. And I do remember that show went very poorly. The people there were like, they were there to have dinner and get some awards. And they were like, "What is this improv show? This is not what we wanted." So they were not into the show. We did a poor job because the audience was just like, obviously didn't want us there. And then we did get some complaints after that, that they were like, "Well, you're not funny. And you're just up there like being funny for yourself." And I remember being like, "Oh, that's about the worst criticism I've ever gotten in my life."
Yeah, I will say that, like, fast forward to, I don't know, 2010, when it's like myself and Brant Wadsworth and a bunch of people, we got hired to do a gig in front of someone's Christmas party, like a bank Christmas party. And I think we were in Idaho Falls at that hotel there. I don't remember which one, but it was that tower. Let's call it the DoubleTree. Who knows? But we were performing at a hotel, like banquet hall. And yes, they were eating dinner. And yes, they were having a Christmas party. And yes, they didn't sign up to see improv. And so it was wild to have them watch us and not give two dams or shits about what we were doing, because we were like, we were not something that they went to go seek out. We weren't an improv show that they wanted to see comedy that night. So it was like crickets the whole time. And we were giving them good stuff, but then it got worse, because when the audience isn't behind you, as you know, it's like, it like gets worse and worse. So that's like my biggest fear, is to ever return to a corporate gig, because I know they don't want to see what we're putting out there. And like you said, it's like, they were doing it for their own laughs and chuckles. And it's like, no.
We didn't want to.
We also didn't want to be there, but they did pay us. So.
Did you get 85 cents?
Okay. I don't. Okay. If I'm going to be honest, I think Brandt had the money, but I don't think he ever passed it along to anyone else. But that's just my memory. I think we were doing it for the love of improv. But there was money exchange, and Brant was the leader at that time, and I think he took it.
Oh, I have such a nice memory of Brant that I'm going to share with you now. Okay, so Brant is a dream boat. He is stunning. And I had a crush on him from the start. Ooh, I liked him so much. But he was never very interested in me. I mean, he was very friendly. He was a very nice guy, but we never flirted or anything like that. So one day I decided, all right, it's time to do it or stop thinking about it. So I called him up and I asked him if he wanted to go on a date with me. And he said, yes. And I was really chill about it. I was like, oh, that's so great. Let's meet Saturday. I've got a plan. Okay, thank you so much. See you. And I hung up, and then I fell to the ground because I had been so stressed out about this. And so I was taking a class at the time for training horses. So I had a horse that I was training, and my friend was in the class and she loaned me her horse. So I took Brant on this lovely horseback trail ride through the mountains. And he's a wonderful person. He was lovely to chat with. We never went on another date, but that was a really lovely memory. We had a great we had a great one date, and then we never dated again.
That is lovely.
I kind of got it out of my system. You know, I was like, oh, that was so great. But he's, you know, a human like me. So.
Yeah, that's good. That this, you were looking up to him like as this, you know, almost, yeah, like you say, not a human like this. Dreamboat. I think he would be wonderful to date. You date him and you're like, good, we're over it.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I did spend a lot of the Comic Frenzy time dating Jeff. I was trying to remember, because I wanted to not give any false memories, but I feel like we were off and on for the whole time. But then I was like, but I don't remember breaking up or getting back together. So maybe it was just super casual. And then after I graduated, I moved to Provo after that. And I was working as a server and writing my novel. So I was working as a server, writing my amazing as to be published novel, and doing Comedy Sports Provo. And then I think we were dating there too. I don't know.
That sounds, plausible, because I did hear from Jeff that y'all did date, but he didn't really go into it. So maybe it was just as casual as you remember it, that y'all dated.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say this. So please do not use it if you think it's too much drama. I leave it totally up to you, because I am moved on. I married a dreamboat. He's awesome. I have three children. But Jeff, at one point, he had a ring and everything. And I had to be like, no, I'm sorry. Then it was really hard to do Comedy Sports together after that. It was a little awkward.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, you're not the only coupling of Comic Frenzy where that situation has happened to. I do remember when I was in it in the 2009 year of, I was going to say generation, but that was just a year. It wasn't a whole generation. 2009, my buddy Jacob, he proposed maybe during a rehearsal, or maybe not during a rehearsal, but announced it at rehearsal, and then we were like, oh yay, wonderful, this will be great. But then they like totally broke it off very shortly after. But I was like, that was weird. And then he ended up marrying someone else also on Comic Frenzy, and then years later they got divorced. Maybe not too many years later, but they did get divorced. So I'm like, oh, something about that Comic Frenzy energy puts people together, but it's not for long, I think. And unless you're, well, I don't know, because James and Valerie knew each other probably outside of Comic Frenzy, and then she kind of got brought in because of him, I think.
Mm-hmm. They were together before she started, so.
Yeah. But it's wild, and I think it's really funny, the like the college romance aspect of it, because it's called a showmance, no?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there wasn't too many romances on Comic Frenzy because there were so few women. Like, at first it was just like me and Patrice, and I was like off and on with Jeff throughout a big chunk of it. And I don't think Patrice dated anyone, and I don't think any of the boys dated each other, but they might have kept it very discreet. And we would never out someone on this.
No, that's not what this is for. No, I think like in the process of editing, you just run everything by everybody and you say, can I put this in? And if they say yes, I'll put it in. And if they say no, I won't put it in. But I think it's fun. It's fun to get the whole scope of the story as best as we can remember it, because I'm hoping to do like, you know, pay homage to like the original group and how it evolved into like this second generation of the group to the modern times, which I had tried to go on campus and visit every year, every other year. But, you know, with COVID, I haven't been. And so I was like trepidatious to know, is Comic Frenzy still alive? But people have now messaged me, yes, we did shows. And I'm like, okay, good. Because don't die.
My little brother was in Comic Frenzy.
Aaron.
He went to BYU Idaho. Yeah, Aaron. Did you ever meet him?
Yeah, I did. I forgot earlier in the interview I was going to bring up. And you're a... what's it called? A family affair. You're a legacy. You're a legacy member of Comic Frenzy because your little brother came in. I do know him. And I remember he was either right around my time or right after where we were friends on campus. We had a little crossover. So I was like, oh my gosh, you're so famous because your sister did it.
And my little sister went to BYU Idaho too. And she was always into comedy, and she was more on the stand-up arm of comedy. I don't know if she ever did it. Did you ever hear Megan Alsop?
I don't know, but I'll look it up. I'll look her up. I'll see.
I mean, I can ask her too.
I guess you're related, so she would answer you. Yeah, let me know.
Okay, I'll ask her. You know, when you've got six siblings, it's hard to keep track of who did what, but that's very normal at BYU Idaho.
True. Yeah.
I tell people that in Japan that I've got six siblings, and they just are baffled. They are baffled by it.
I wish I knew a Japanese word. I can only say like sugoi desu, but that wouldn't be like surprise. That would be like, that's cool. But if they were like, oh,
bikurishita.
Yeah, I like that word.
That's they're surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Or they go uso, and that means that's lying. You're lying. It's very fun. But I actually don't speak that much Japanese because I teach English at the university. So I'm speaking English to my colleagues and my students all day. And then I come home and I married an American person from Wisconsin. And so we speak English at home and with the kids. So my Japanese actually is tanking.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that. If you don't have people to speak with it, S-Y-M. No, S-Y-L. Speak your language. Mm-hmm. Too many acronyms that I couldn't keep them all straight.
So sometimes on the like the Facebook group, I'll see people being like, let's do a reunion. Let's get together. And I would love to do that. But then, of course, COVID happened. And the school set schedule in Japan is very different from the Western style of a school schedule. So it's really hard to have the time off of school to make a trip back to America. For example, we get we get August and September off for our summer break. We have classes through June and July. So I've seen on the Facebook group, they're like, oh, let's have a reunion in July or June or something. And I'm like, I can't make it until it's like August, maybe. And it like even mid-August is the start of my vacation.
Yeah, but that would be really cool if that could happen.
I would love to come back. And, you know, sometimes I hear about my high school reunions and I have never cared about going to a high school reunion at all. But a Comic Frenzy reunion, I would love to come back and go to one.
Yeah, that would be so fun. It would be, that would be the max, you know, that would be awesome.
So if you make it happen when you do your documentary premiere, I will come.
Yeah, I will do it. And then I'll make sure to schedule it around a time that you could come.
I am good. I am free in February, March, August, and September.
All right. Good to know. Good to know. I'm feeling like we did a good job talking about Comic Frenzy, but is there anything when you're thinking about your time in Comic Frenzy, beginning, middle, end, that you did want to like throw in there?
I don't think so. I mentioned all the things that I like have been thinking of and remembering. Comic Frenzy was just, it was a really great experience. And I think that if I hadn't done Comic Frenzy, I probably would have just, you know, been friends with my six roommates that I had freshman year and just only been friends with them. So Comic Frenzy really just like opened my world a lot, and I got to meet some really cool people. And it's really fun to sometimes be like, we're watching a show or something, and I'm like, oh, that's my friend on that show right there. We were in Comic Frenzy together. Or, oh, my friend, he's a writer for this show. We were on Comic Frenzy together. So it's really exciting when I can say that.
Yeah, I love that. And like you said earlier, it's like better than your high school reunion, because like you came out and did this thing and made so many good memories and had good connections with these people that it was better than the connections that you would have had otherwise, I assume.
Yeah, definitely. So it was a really great experience. I'm glad it's still going.
Me too.
So of course the two main people are Jeff Blake and James Best. But no, and then there was like Patrice. And then I know there was like a whole, like when I look back at pictures, I'm like, oh, there's like 11 people on stage. And then of course there's Brandt.
There are some that I don't really know as well. Like people mention Andy Donkin, but I don't really remember him.
Oh, I remember Andy Donkin. I needed to learn how to play Pinochle for some reason. And he knew how to play Pinochle, and he taught me how to play Pinochle so that I could, I have no idea why I needed to know this old-timey grandmotherly card game. But he's like, yeah, I know how to play Pinochle. I'll teach you. So he taught me how to play Pinochle. That is my one memory of him.
Changed your life.
Yeah. I don't remember how to play it now.
Yeah. Just changed your life for as long as you remembered how to play it. Yeah. Okay. That I'm satisfied if you're satisfied.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful. But thank you so much. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's telling me thanks for being a great guest. Oh. So apparently I was a great guest.
You were a great guest. Thank you.
Well, I'm very happy that you're doing this, and I can't wait to see it. And then just have everybody talk about me and then tell me what they say in the future. Bring me up all the time.
For sure. I can't wait. I can't wait to just, you know, spread your memory around. Like, obviously.
Everyone will be like, oh, yeah, she was that kind of mean girl who didn't talk very much.
I'll have to I'll tell Brady. Yeah, the thing I got most from that interview with Sarah was you thought she was really mean.
Yeah, and she really didn't like you at all. No.
Not at all.
You can tell him that he definitely changed my resting face to be a more gentle face.
Yeah, I will. I'll let him know. And I'll let him know that it was for good. You know what I mean?
Because if there's anything the world needs more of, it's men telling women they need to smile and be nicer. What have I started? I'm sending so many messages here.
You are. You're like, I'm grateful that he told me that thing about myself. But, you know.
But also, is it necessary for another white man to be telling another woman what to do with her face? Do we need more of that in this world?
Right. You know, I even got it, and I'm not a woman, so I don't have that daily struggle. But as a flight attendant, I was in the airport, and I'm usually like very happy when I'm being a flight attendant, like smile on, and you know, I'm yeah, okay. But I was just walking through the airport, and I think I was trying to figure out what gate I was going to. So in that moment, I was like looking at my phone, trying to think what gate I'm going to. So I was a little distracted from all these people around me, and I'm not on the job technically. I'm just trying to get to my job. And a guy, I'm going up the escalator, he's coming down the escalator, and he's like, you know, it'd be better if you smiled more. And I was shook. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is what they tell me. This is what all women tell me, and I've experienced it.
And I, everyone I've talked to, like in the moment when someone says that, like you're just kind of like shocked. And so you're like, oh yes. And you kind of do smile. And then you're like, oh wait, what?
Exactly. I know. And part of me wanted to say, I was just smiling the moment before you said that.
Oh, I was just going to say, I was like a little bit nervous about the interview because I'm not Mormon anymore. And I was like, oh, like, I don't know. Is it all going to be about how like, how Comic Frenzy instilled a love of the Book of Mormon in me, and how am I still living my life according to the principles of Joseph Smith or whatever? And I was like, oh, I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, that would be uncomfy.
Okay, so I'm very glad that this was chill. And I kind of wanted to like look up all the other Comic Frenzy people and be like, are you still Mormon? And I'm like going on their like pages and being like, are you wearing tank tops? Are you drinking a mug with something hot in it? Is that coffee? I don't know.
Exactly.
So I don't know about anyone else. I knew that I wasn't Mormon while I was at BYU-Idaho. So I waited until I graduated. And then I like sent my little letter to take my name off the rolls like a week after I graduated. So I knew it before I had kids. But if anything, having kids would be like, I do not want my kids to have the childhood and to grow up with the insecurities and restrictions on them. Like having kids would make me leave more than anything else.
Exactly. That's what I would assume. And yet some people just have enough, I don't know, brainwashing. I don't know. I'm not trying to be mean, as you are not either, but we're just being realistic. It's like, what? Why are you there?
I don't know. But my parents had 7 kids and 5 of them are very strong Mormons still. So,
wow.
A lot of the youth are sticking with it.
Oh, man. Well, I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
I think a little bit of drama would be great. So you have my permission to put whatever the heck you want.
All right. I love it. And that's what I've been kind of telling the others, too. I'm like, just so you know, we're going to go for drama and realism. And it's okay if you like grew up and forgave people, but in the moment we're going back in time and we're living it as it happened, because that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Love it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Well, it was great catching up and talking, hearing about Comic Frenzy from another point of view.
For sure. Same. I appreciate it. And then, yeah, you go have a great rest of your day while I have the great rest of my night, you know?
Yes. Okay, well.
Bye-bye. Thank you again.
Bye. Thank you.